All right, let's reconvene, please. I call to order the March 18th Board of Governors meeting for the BCR. Welcome back, everybody. And I'm up first. All right. Let's get to that. President's report, a few items to report on here. I already talked about on January 29th being at the council to testify in support of access to justice funding. On February 28th, a few weeks ago, we wrapped up the moot court work here in the district where all the law schools have participated. Well done, Darren, Pam, and staff for coordinating and shepherding all that through. The president of the bar gets to serve as one of the three judges at the very end, which was a really fascinating experience. I went to Charles last year so I could get ready and see what it was like. And then I was up there and saw what it was like. Both teams did amazing. It was GW versus Catholic. Catholic ultimately won. I will say it was not a unanimous decision. I'll say they voted for who, but point being, it was very close because they both teams did excellent. I mean, just really excellent. It was a very seemingly simple case about an engagement ring and a dispute over that, which ended up being far more complex than you would imagine. But I was really, just like last year, blown away at the quality of their arguments and how they performed and, you know, recovering from being thrown a little bit here and there. Sabina came with me as well. I said, you should come and watch it. And afterwards, she said, yeah, it's just like normal litigation. I said, well, for people who don't do it, that's a big deal. But yeah, again, thank you for all the work that the team here did on that. I know it's a lot, but it's very meaningful to the students who participate in that and good training as well. Judicial and Bar Conference, you've heard me mention before, is coming up sooner than you think, April 25th. You probably received a registration email for that, so please register and attend if you can. It'll be a great day. A lot of good programming. A lot of work has gone into it. Again, thank you to the bar staff who have really done the yeoman's work on that. There's a ton of work that goes into it to coordinate the people on the program committee to review all the submissions that we get. But I think it's really fantastic. You've heard me talk about, and Kelly talk about, this coming Saturday. We have the Board of Governors Day for the Advice and Referral Clinic here at the bar. I hope you can join us for that. We have next Wednesday, March 26th, the first ever voluntary bar fair here in the building. It'll be in the evening. Very exciting. So we've tried to rethink some of the voluntary bar leadership group meetings to make them a little more dynamic and engaging. And I think it was Christina Jackson, if I'm not mistaken, who came up with the idea for this this particular approach. And so we'll have the voluntary bars who have signed up to participate sort of have booths and get to talk to people who come. But if we could have a great showing from the Board of Governors, that would be wonderful as well to show that strong connection between the mandatory bar as well as the voluntary bars. And that's next Wednesday here. April 2nd, we'll have Constitution Classroom here at the building. Again, I invite you to attend that if you can. It's really amazing. You have different ages of the students who come, and then they break out into different classrooms and learn about the Constitution, which I think of course is very, very important to help them understand that. They're also always looking for people to teach it. So if you have an interest in that, let staff know. Maybe people can connect you with the Constitution Society staff who run it. April 8th, we sent out an email yesterday, I think, on this, Darren, you did. We're going to host a joint DC Bar, New York State Bar Association reception here at the building. We did one of these with them up in New York City late last year. We took the train up and had a reception. It turned out to be great. So we want to do that one there down here for some things that they'll be doing. So please join us for that. And then we will have a member reception where we'll get to hear from some president-elect candidates, meet the other candidates on May 1st here in the building as well. The other and final item I would like to remind you all and promote is the DC Bar Ambassador. Thank you to the team for putting that all together and sending that out on a bi-weekly basis. I know you just sent one out recently. I'm going to call out Patrick, who I saw posted on LinkedIn, so you get a star for that. But I think it's great because there's just so much that goes on in this organization. To have a document like that that really sort of synthesizes and highlights some of the key things that are coming up in the very near future is a great way for members to get involved. And just so you have a sense of where this goes, not only does the board get it, but it goes to all the staff here, the attorney-client arbitration board, client security fund, legal ethics committee, lawyer assistance committee, rules of professional conduct review committee, innovations legal practice committee, all the voluntary bars, judicial evaluation committee, CLE committee, leadership development committee, and the communities committee. So if you can also push that out to your networks as well, you'll be in good company and help get the word out. And I think it really means something when people get it from a board member as well. So I would highlight that you are a board member of the bar when you send it out, so people really pay attention to it. So that concludes my president's report. And then I know we will have our full agenda of the board meeting here, and then we will go into an executive session towards the end to consider requests that we received for public statements. So that will be an executive session. So we have three board members. Any questions? Anything? Yes.
Does the DC Bar Ambassador also go to the steering committee members for the communities?
Yes. Steering committee members.
Yep. Wasn't on my list, but yes. Right. Well, I'll move on then to the consent agenda. Is there a motion?
Motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Item is approved. Treasurer report. Mark.
Can you hear me okay? Is it going through?
Yes.
Okay, great. I am reporting on the financial results of the bar for the first 6 months of fiscal year 2025. This is for the period ending in December of 2024. We have slides. I don't know. Here we go. Okay, if you can go to slide two, please. Thank you. The bar ended the quarter with a slight surplus from operations of $198,000. We had budgeted for a deficit of $600,000, which means we were better than budget by almost $800,000. Year-to-date revenue was $21.6 million, which is more than budget by 1%. Our expenses were $21.4 million, which was less than budget by 3%. Overall revenue is greater than budget by $140,000, or 1% more than what was budgeted. Higher than budgeted results for license fee revenue, for more reinstatement fees than expected, higher rent from updated leases. We received a percentage of sales from Cucina Marini. Additionally, higher meeting room rentals by external parties was offset by lower than budgeted sponsorship revenue as we shift to an in-house marketing program. Expense savings occurred in professional fees from the timing of services received, and in miscellaneous expenses and equipment lease and services due to lower than budgeted building expenses to date. Personnel expenses were higher than budget due to higher health insurance costs, overtime, conversion of one consultant into an employee, and the use of temporary staffing for staff on leave, parental leave, and vacancies. The increase in net assets of $1.6 million is a result of $198,000 surplus from operations, a net $451 in client security fund disbursements offset by investment gains of $1.4 million. If we can go to slide three. For non-licensed fee-funded activities, communities had a deficit of $48,000 from operations, which was better than budget by $26,000. Overall revenue was less than budget by 1%, with lower community dues offset by higher than budgeted sponsorship and practice manual revenue. Communities also recognized expense savings from food due to fewer in-person events and professional fees related to photography and IT-related consultants. CLE had a deficit of $31,000 from operations, which was $30,000 better than budget. Revenue was better than budget by 14% due to passport sales reflected in admissions and registrations and on-demand courses reflected in books and publication sales. Expenses were over budget by $2,000. This was caused by a shift of a consultant to employee status. The consolidated CLE program, which includes mandatory courses and rules education, generated a surplus from operations of $127,000 due to revenue from on-demand course registration, books and publications, and savings in expense and food and beverage, as well as meeting room rentals. Watch. Other non-licensed fee-funded activities, which include certificates of good standing, sponsorship related to member benefit affinity programs, rentals of the conference center and the studio to outside clients, and the newly launched MyDC Lawyer referral service, altogether generated a surplus of $189,000 from operations. This was $131,000 less than we had expected. My DC lawyer, the new benefit launched this year, generated $24,000 during this period. Overall revenue was less than expected by 20%, with better than expected results in rental revenue for the studio and meeting rooms, offset by a shortfall in sponsorships as the transition to an in-house program is implemented. Expenses were less than budget by 3%, primarily from savings in personnel costs. IT license fees were over budget by $43,000 due to the MyDC lawyer program implementation that had not been budgeted this year. This is offset by $24,000 in revenue generated. Can you go to the next slide, please? So we had $111 million in total assets at the end of the quarter. Cash balance was $3.7 million and investment balance was $30.5 million at the end of December. If we compare this to the same time last year, our cash decreased by $3.6 million, but our investments increased by $7.3 million. As part of our investment strategy, we moved operating cash into higher earnings, short-term fixed income investment to take advantage of the higher interest rate environment. All in, our cash and investment portfolio has grown 12% over last year. The balance on our mortgage, which comes due in 2037, was $47.9 million. And this concludes my report of the financial performance through the second quarter.
Any questions?
All right.
Okay. Thank you for that. CEO's report.
Thank you, Sean. You'll be hearing from the nominations committee in a minute about its process of slate of candidates. Excuse me. But the election runs from April 15th to June 4th, and the results will be announced on June 9th. As in past years, all the voting is online, and you will get all of the eligible active members will get a link in an email. They can just click and vote, or you can log on to your single sign-on at dcbar.org and vote that way. Some folks do it when they're renewing their licenses on May 1st. There, as Sean mentioned, there is going to be a member reception on May 1st here in the building at which the two president-elect candidates will make brief remarks, but all the candidates are invited to attend and network with the members. New this year is going to be a virtual candidate forum for the president-elect candidates. The date is not set yet, although it's likely to be in the beginning of May, one of the first 2 weeks of May. In that setting, folks will be able to pose questions in advance to the president-elect candidate or through the chat during the webinar itself. So we will be hosting it. That is, our programs group will be hosting it, and more details will come out as soon as we get the date set. We recognize that many of our members are experiencing a period of great transition and instability. And so what we've done is try to build and bring together all the programming that we offer to support them in this time. It's all being done under Darren's office in the programs group with the help of marketing to get the word out. And you're going to be seeing the messaging that packages these services together for transitioning and struggling lawyers. This includes practical programming through practice management advisory service on building your law practice, which is going on literally down the hall as we speak. Well-being programs supported by the lawyer well-being community and the lawyer assistance program, resume building, networking. One of the communities offered a job fair. We have a job board as part of our career center at dcbar.org and a number of other programs that are going to be coming out for those lawyers, our members who are looking for new jobs, new positions, and trying to deal with the stress of a very uncertain time period. As one example, our community's lawyer well-being community, our newest community, along with the lawyer assistance program, put on a program called Staying Grounded in Challenging Times. We had almost 300 people dial into that meeting. If you have become aware of any other additional programming, whether it's through voluntary bars or some other legal service provider or another organization that you would like us to push out to our members, I've got one just yesterday. We're happy to get it out to our membership through our various channels. So if you've got anything, please let Darren is probably the best person to let us as he's coordinating those efforts. A quick update on the Strategic Planning Committee, which, as you know, is underway right now. Jeff Kleinberg is the chair. Thank you all for participating in the survey. Most of you completed it, which was great. They are finishing the data gathering phase now, and they've done focus groups with lots of different stakeholders, big firms, small firms, the court, the law schools, and tons of other folks who we touch along the way. They're putting that information together, coming up with a framework. There'll be a retreat in May for the Strategic Planning Committee where they will break it into pieces and then present it as a framework for you to all approve, consider, and hopefully approve at the June board meeting. Our current strategic plan ends in 2025, so timing is perfect. And then finally, Sedina and I had the pleasure of going out to Chicago last week for the Bar Leadership Institute. It's sponsored by the ABA's Center for Bar Leadership. And it is an opportunity to spend two and a half days with between the incoming volunteer leaders and the staff of bars across the country. And we talk about how we communicate and how what it means to be in a bar association, how to deal with the current times that we're in, how to navigate difficult messaging, communications, and the rest. And it's really, it's a chance for us to start to build a working relationship because we're going to be spending lots of time together over the course of the next year. In addition to which, the chief executives of all of these bars, we meet separately for a half a day, and there are, I think, 85 of us all together. And what's really nice about that is that we can then talk about the problem solving on a staff level, like all the mandatory bar leaders, we all get together. So, you know, it's the executive director of Florida and Georgia and Texas and myself and the others to figure out like, what's going on, what are we doing? And as we'll talk about more in the executive session, issuing public statements, adjusting for the executive orders that have been issued and the rest. So it was a terrific opportunity to see what's going on across the country. And with that, I will answer any questions. Yeah,
Mark. Do we have any idea of how many attorneys have actually been impacted by the layoffs so far in the federal government?
I don't have the number. Like, I don't have a sense of how many there are. I mean, we're talking thousands of government employees, of course.
Yeah.
And they're going across the various agencies. I'm sure it's in the hundreds of lawyers, at least. Now,
during the today's meeting, we're going to be hearing from the nominations committee. I know in years past, we previously heard from the nominations committee before the nominations were publicly announced.
Well, you hear from the committee, but they don't generally come to the board until the slate has been announced to talk about the process that went underway.
So during this slate, there were some emails that we received as members of the bar, members of the board. I received some communications about the nominees. And there's obviously been a lot of information about the press that's been circulated. And my question is whether or not there should have been more disclosure to the board about potential press communication that would have occurred.
I guess what I can say is that I'm not sure how that would play out. So the way the bylaws read is that the nomination committee assembles a slate, delivers it to the secretary, and then it all gets published. We can't anticipate, and we can't foresee how it's going to be received publicly, and therefore we're not quite sure what the message would even be. Now, again, I help staff the committee. I'm not the chair of the committee. It was Chad Sarchio. So I, like everyone else, I received messages afterwards. I also spoke to at least half a dozen reporters in the days that followed the release of the nominations.
I appreciate that. I think there was an email that was circulated about press contact. The Iramid sent that and circulated to the
board. Oh, I understand what you're asking.
I'm just wondering if that could have been done a little bit sooner. And I'm just wondering what was the timing or at least the decision-making as to the timing of that email to the board?
As soon as we received a call from a reporter, we sent out the email. Again, during orientation, we generally tell the board if you receive member communications and questions about the bar, its operations, what's going on, to immediately transmit it to, you know, the only difference with this particular email that we sent out was because if it was a press inquiry, to include me, because I was talking, I was the point person for all of the reporter calls to ensure that the bar was speaking with one voice. And so if for some reason something went to Edom that was very time sensitive, but not didn't get to me, I might not be aware of it and have an opportunity to respond to the reporter. That's the reason why that change was made. The minute we realized that reporters were seeking a comment of the bar. Yes.
Question going back to the resources for
you talk a little louder. Yeah.
You're off now.
Great. Okay. A question going back to the resources for people in transition.
Yeah.
Are these things that the bar is charging for or okay?
No. They're offering.
Any other questions? Thank you for that. And thank you for the work the bar is doing on that very topic. Because I get emails from voluntary bar leaders for this program and your phone calls and the coordinating. It's really fantastic. Speaking of the nominations committee, Chad Sarchio, who I know is on the phone with us. Welcome.
Hi, Sean, and everybody else. Sorry I can't be in the room with you or live on screen, although that I assure you inures to all of your benefit. But it is a pleasure to join you to give at least a brief summary of the work of the nominations committee for this election cycle. And I'll just give you a few of the highlights, and then of course I'm happy to entertain any questions. Consistent with our typical practice, the committee this year was constituted in September of 2024. We were well represented across the spectrum of sort of the categories of our bar members. And it included representation by way of lawyers who were in solo practice, small firms, large firms, in-house, academic practice, government settings. So we had a good, robust set of voices in the room. As you may recall, the call for nominations launched in November of last year and concluded by the end of January of this year. We were fortunate to receive 48 nominations total, and those were mostly self-nominations for the various positions on the slate. There were a handful of nominations by other bar members. The staff, of course, was diligent in going through its typical vetting process with each of the nominees to ensure that they remained in good standing with the bar and active, and that they had no public disciplinary records. And the committee then engaged in its consistent practice of reviewing each of the candidates' application or nomination materials, discussing the profiles that they presented and various questions of balance in various ways, diversity in various ways across the ballot, and ranked all of the nominees against the various positions that they had expressed interest in, and deconflicting to a certain extent, since some members will nominate themselves or will nominate others for multiple positions. Most importantly, perhaps to some of you in the room right now, we of course interviewed both president-elect nominees, as happens each year. They were both very engaging, thoughtful, professional, fair, fair-minded, candid, personable people. They both seem, of course, to be very well qualified to lead the bar professionally. And perhaps most importantly, they expressed the desire to lead the bar in sort of an appropriate, committed, respectful way. And in all ways represented themselves sort of consistent with the qualities and traits that I just described. After going through the entire process, we delivered our slate to the secretary in February, towards the end of February, and immediately nominated the nominees of their selection and formally transmitted to the secretary that slate on the 21st and subsequently to the board. The slate was made public on Friday afternoon, February 21st as well. One small wrinkle that we hit over this past weekend, as it happens, one of the candidates for the ABA delegate position, Ali Ranama, withdrew his name from the ballot. And so since the committee had already completed its charge and been dismissed, the staff reached out to sort of the next highest ranked candidate for that position left amongst those who had not been initially selected. That's Donald Quinn. And we were fortunate that he confirmed his continuing interest in running for the ABA delegate position, and that he was available to do so. So the bar is making the necessary updates to the website and other materials to ensure that he's included in the slate. The last important bit of our business as a committee was to identify and recommend someone to all of you for the position of the non-attorney position on the board. And we've identified Deandra Roche for that non-voting, non-attorney position. She is well familiar with the bar through past work with the attorney-client arbitration board. In fact, she is a former vice chair of that board. She has an incredibly lengthy resume of engagement, both in her professional arbitration space, but also sort of a very lengthy resume in terms of some of her volunteerism in a professional sense. She's an adjunct professor a couple of times over. She's been a guest speaker in a number of law adjacent arbitration related spaces. She, through her work with ACAB, she's proven herself to be engaged and fair-minded, sort of a really enthusiastic volunteer. And she has her nomination for the position is supported by Regulation Council staff. So the committee has really no qualms in recommending her and believes she'd be a really valuable contributor to the board and its work. And so upon your approval, if you decide to go that direction, Ms. Roche's term would begin July 1st of this year and conclude the following June 30th. And so with that, I think that's a good high-level accounting of the nominations committee's work this year.
Thank you.
And I'm happy to take any questions. Absolutely.
Yeah. Thanks, Chad, for all your work on this. I'm just curious, how many people submitted names or had names submitted for the president position?
What I can say is we applied all of our typical DC bar past president and other folks, dark arts and ninja tricks in efforts to have a sort of a wider array of people to select from perhaps for the president-elect position, but we had two, and they're the two that you see on the ballot.
Other questions for Chad? Well, the committee has recommended Deandra Roche to serve as a non-lawyer candidate on the board. So at this point, I'll take a motion for her appointment.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor of appointing Ms. Roche to the Board of Governors? Please say aye.
Aye.
Any nay? Any abstention?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, that's approved. Chad, I think that's it in terms of questions. So thank you very much for your work and the committee's.
What's that?
Steve Miller. Yeah, sorry about that, Steve.
No, I just raised my hand for two and voting.
Oh, you're voting. Okay. I thought you were waving at us. All right. Well, then what I was saying will continue. I will thank you, Chad, for the work that you have done as chair of the committee. I know it's a lot of work, and thank you to the committee members for their work as well. And with that, I guess that wraps up the committee's work for this year. So thank you.
Thanks, Sean. It was our pleasure to serve.
We will move on to the report of the audit committee. Finally, Ramya, we've been trying to schedule this for a minute.
Yes. So in your materials is a memo from the audit committee. So the auditors have completed their work for the fiscal year ending June 30th, 2024 for both the bar and for the Pomona Center. Clean opinions for both organizations from the audit. There was a one minor issue that was identified with respect to the pro bono center audit, which had already been corrected and and management has already implemented the recommendations. So the details are in the memo in the materials. I'm happy to answer any questions that others may have.
Any questions? Thank you for that. And speaking of appointments, we'll move on to the next item, which is appointing an individual to fill a Board of Governors voting seat, attorney seat. As you may remember, and this is in the packet as well, but Kay Percozzi submitted her resignation last month. And we have a process for filling vacancies on the board, which is to go to the next highest vote getter from the previous election, see if they're still interested in serving, and if so, ask the board to vote on appointing that person. In this case, it's Anthony Coppolino. We have reached out to him, and he is ready, willing, and able to serve. So I will take a motion to appoint Mr. Coppolino to the Board of Governors.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Nay. Any abstentions? All right, motion passes. So hold up, let Mr. Coppolino. So I'm moving the microphone closer. That's where you are on the agenda here. So
I am.
Go back to the budget committee, Sabina, for the FY25-6 DC bar budget.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We'll wait a moment for the presentation to be shared. Excellent. Thank you. So we'll now be reporting on the Budget Committee's recommendations for the FY25 DC bar budget. I'm sorry, the FY26 DC bar budget. Again, focused on how to balance managing the inflation impact on our operations and staff while continuing to provide value to the members. Some of these slides will look familiar, so we will move through those relatively quickly to the extent you've heard those a few moments ago in our prior board meeting. Unlike with the proposed budget for the DC Bar Pro Bono Center, this budget is not slated for a vote today. That vote will take place on April 22nd, but I'll be delivering the committee's recommendations today. Again, to set the stage, the conservatism principle in our budget policy impacts the bar budget, as well as the pro bono center's budget, which I spoke about earlier. The principle underlies how the entire budget is constructed. Again, to provide a few examples of that, the number of new members and transitions between membership categories, this applies to the expected renewals that we've anticipated before June 30th, applies to the funding of staff positions and to cash flow. Next slide. So these were the key budget considerations that the committee was analyzing. And we were considering these factors when looking at the license fee rates, the operating expenses, staffing, and the capital budget. They include the DC Bar strategic plan, economic conditions, and the inflation impact, which of course has been a bit more volatile lately. Reserve levels, the client security fund, bank loan covenants, license fee history, and member expectations. Next slide. A note on reserves, the committee also reserves the required or reviews the required reserves annually, which are listed here on the slide. All of the budget elements touching on areas where there are reserve requirements are compliant with the reserves policy. Next slide. This chart here reflects the undesignated reserves for the bar since we moved to this building in 901. The undesignated reserves continue to increase with the exception of FY20, which was related to a swap loss, and FY23, which was related to poor investment returns. Next slide. We also think about member expectations, which are, of course, to maintain or increase the level of services we provide to members, to provide superior program content, to maintain the DC Bar's facilities, to provide staff and members with effective technology, including the website, our association management system, our case management system, our online programming, and our lawyer referral service, MyDC Lawyer, as well as to establish effective communication channels through our email marketing system and our ongoing production of the award-winning Washington Lawyer. Next slide. So some of the budget highlights for the DC Bar budget for FY26, our revenue increases 3.2% over the FY25 budget, which amounts to an additional $1.48 million. This increase includes a 2.1% increase for the active license fee rate from 348 to 341, a 2.4% increase for the inactive license fee rate from 217 to 217 from 212, a 1.9% increase for the judicial license fee rate, which will be increasing from 154 to 157, and revised community fee structure that stays in place. The expenses increased 3.3% over the FY25 budget, which includes, as before, a 3.5% merit pool for the staff. It's compared to 3% for last year. And as before I mentioned, the fringe rate has increased to 37%. That's based on increased health costs and the current rate of 36.27%. With inflation continuing to impact the economy and the staff, the budget prioritizes existing employees to maximize retention. And again, I'll just note that the CPI for 2024 was up 2.9% compared to the prior year. Next slide. Additional highlights, the staffing for the bar remains at current levels. We have 3.2 FTEs that have been left vacant and not funded in FY26 to mitigate the impact of inflation on our operating budget and to prioritize existing staff. There will be no judicial and bar conference in FY26, which is helpful for the budget and makes my life easier than Sean's. Our building cost increases slightly from $61.77 per square foot to $61.82 per square foot. The budget also includes a client securities fund funding to $250,000 to reach the maximum per the reserves policy. Additional highlights, the capital budget includes funding for AV furniture and infrastructure upgrades for the ODC BPR courtroom and offices, new server hardware, implementation costs related to new marketing software, tech and maintenance upgrades, and replacement of the 8th floor outdoor furniture, as well as architectural studies for vacant space, primarily on the 7th floor. Right now, that space is a shell, and we're considering building it out as spec space to potentially be more move-in ready and more attractive to potential tenants. So some highlights on the revenue front. The license fees are budgeted at $37 million due to a combination of inflation-related increases for members along with growth in membership for the active class. We'll have admissions and registrations revenue is budgeted at $800,000, which is a decrease from FY25. Our on-demand budget increases to $1.2 million. Communities dues are budgeted at $1.5 million. We are budgeting conservatively to see if we will maintain membership numbers after the initial rollout of the revised value proposition. We have rent increases as a result of annual lease escalators. Our sponsorship revenue decreases to $800,000 as we transition to our new in-house sponsorship development program. Other revenue, which includes certificates of good standing and MyDC lawyer fees, is increasing to $1.7 million. The total revenue for the bar is $46.5 million, which is an increase of 3.2% or $1.48 million over FY25. As for expenses, we are, as you all know, currently in an inflationary environment. We continue to experience a highly competitive labor market where employers need to provide wages that are keeping up with inflation, expanded benefits, as well as providing flexibility regarding where and how employees work. The staff and members share the impact of inflation while controlling the overall increase to the license fee rate. So taking into account all of these factors, the committee felt, as I mentioned, a 3.5% merit pool was appropriate to retain and attract the highest quality of staff. The budget keeps the 2% market adjustment pool, which is gives us the flexibility to fill gaps between what's budgeted and market conditions when hiring. And then that allows us to also make any appropriate adjustments to current employee salaries for promotion purposes. And as I mentioned before, the fringe rate is increasing slightly to 37%. Professional fees have decreased because there's no JBC, and overall expenses have been increased for inflation, although we were able to provide some savings in the budget. And as to proposed license fees, in this budget, the staff and the members, again, as I've shared, share in the inflationary impact. And the consensus of the committee was that it was appropriate to recommend an increase of $7 to $348 for the active license fee rates, which, as I noted before, is a 2.1% increase. We project an increase in active members of 1.6%. We've also recommended an increase of $5 to $217 for the inactive license fee rates. We have a projected decrease of that category of members of 1.9%. And then the final category here is an increase of $3 to $157 for the judicial license fee rate, with a 1.9% increase in that population. Next slide. So here's an overview of the license fee history. This chart reflects the rates for each membership category, beginning with active on the left and inactive, and then judicial. The percentage increase or decrease for active fees are also shown. And you'll see that we had a significant increase back in FY 17 and FY 18. That was because we had just finished building and furnishing the building, and we had to start building back our reserves, which we had used to purchase the land for the building. We have not increased the fee greater than 5.4% and actually had a modest reduction in FY 22. So to summarize the budget committee's recommendations for the FY 26 budget is to maintain or increase the same high level of services, to execute projects in support of the strategic plan, that members and staff will share the inflationary impact while controlling the overall increase to the license fee rate. We increase staff salaries to maximize retention by prioritizing our existing employees. And we have some freezes on hiring for vacant positions to mitigate the impact of inflation on the operating budget. Final slide. So the recommendation results in a budgeted deficit of $600,000, just over $600,000, which is about $15,000 more than the FY25 budget. The board would also be approving the capital budget, which totals $644,000, $644,150. And again, as I shared to start, the board is not expected to vote on this or the license fee recommendation until our meeting in April.
Thank you for that initial presentation on the FY26 budget. Are there any questions?
I just have a couple questions. On the hiring freeze, are there openings, vacancies that are currently being unfilled at this point? And how many are there?
There are three vacancies that are left as a result of this budget, and they exist now. That is to say that they're not being posted as vacant spots that we're not hiring for. We just left them frozen. So, which means they're on the books as an FTE. There's no funding for it in the current fiscal year, and we're not seeking funding for the next fiscal year. And just to be candid, when the individual divisions proposed their respective budgets, there were requests for increases in staff. And because we needed to balance out the increase in expenses and not have to jack up license fees so high, we said, no, there will be no new staff. We'll have to work with the staff that we have right now. And so we left those positions frozen again this year. Again, you know, Sedina said, to balance out sharing the weight of an inflationary environment. So we prioritize existing staff first. We want to make sure that they have good benefits, because the bar provides good benefits. They have a secure job. And if we were in a period of great surpluses, we could then fill those three vacant positions. But we're not seeking to do so next year.
So were those positions filled in the past, and what were the
I think one of them was in CLE. One, I mean, off the top of my head, I don't remember which divisions they are. Mark can pull them up. They're not the pro bono center. I know that. They're not the executive office. But there might be one. I is kind of
Bob.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Yeah.
Okay. So we've got a manager in marketing that's frozen. We have an AV specialist in facilities frozen. And we have a law clerk / paralegal that's frozen.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, Bob.
Any other questions? Thank you. And we'll be voting on this at the next board meeting.
Thank you again to the committee and to the staff for their support through this process.